following podcast is brought to you by the Communications and Media Studies Department at Dominican University of California. I'm DJ Moco, and this is Creasing Corners. Grab a drink, get cozy, and get ready to read between the lines. Welcome back. This is episode 6. Today, we're with Sherry T. Joseph, a very special guest, award-winning author of Edge of the Known World. You want to say hi?
Hey, everyone. I'm very glad to be here.
We're going to cover a lot today, and it's a very exciting episode for me because I read this book. Do you want to actually describe what your book is about?
It's a realistic near future where a 23-year-old, very brilliant, illegal refugee is trying to make her way in an era where genetic screening tests like 23andMe or Ancestry.com means that you can't hide in a secret identity anymore, and you sure can't hide your ancestry. So she's trying to navigate that world, which is basically our current world with just a few twists in it. But at heart, it's really a love story between romantic, passionate love, because that's fun, and between a father and a daughter, and very importantly, kind of the love between brothers. So that's the heart of the story.
So I recall you telling me this is a cautionary tale. It's been a year since you've published it. Do you think, I mean, you said it already, but do you think the situation now is still applicable?
It's gone beyond my wildest, I would say, nightmares, not dreams on it. These kind of books, novels, take so long to write. So I have a lot of scientists in my family, and my own family background got me very interested in genetic sciences and a lot of post-World War II history. And I got very interested from one lecture about the plight of, during World War II, there were a lot of Jewish children, there were a lot of Roma children, there were a lot of children of different ethnic groups that Hitler decided were obviously undesirable and wanted to get rid of. And a lot of them looked Aryan. They looked like the Polish population or the German population. So a lot of the children especially got hidden, even though the rest of the families got murdered. And sometimes those kids didn't even know themselves. Hitler knew this, and he got really determined, this is real, I found out, to find a blood test that could detect Gypsy children and Jewish children and several other groups. And of course, he couldn't do that, so it didn't happen. But a couple of years later, I was writing, and I was in a genetics lecture that was talking about this and then casually mentioned 23andMe and Ancestry.com, and one thing led to another, and all of a sudden it occurred to me, wow, what if Hitler had that capacity to find these kids? So I spun that out into a kind of bigger universal tale. The genetics and the genetic testing and the science were all completely real. So I always had a lot of faith in that accuracy. Mm-hmm. But what I didn't really expect is how it would start getting used so quickly, yeah. Right? So like right now in China definitely is using genetic testing to segregate and keep records on ethnic minorities like the Uyghurs up north. So it's definitely getting used. The Trump administration is using some of the genetic testing to look for family members of people who've been deported or are subject to deportation. So I was afraid when I wrote the book that nobody would believe that there'd be a United States that would refuse asylum to people or that would deport people on these kind of grounds. And you know what? I got proven wrong. So that was not the way you want to get proven wrong. But that was really the background of the story. I don't want it to sound so grim because the characters are very, very funny. And they get in a lot of situations. But that's really where the theme of the book came from.
You're talking about your characters now. I actually have another question about your characters is, how did you create your characters? You know, Alex Toshin is a goofball. She is the silliest main character I have approached. I mean, other than John Scalzi's weird characters, but I loved her. Where exactly Are they people based on your real life? Are they anyone from your past? Anyone that you know, a celebrity maybe? I'm more curious about how you made these characters.
I started the idea of the story, I guess, kind of daydreaming from back in college, and a lot of it is basically based on college fronts. Oh. Yeah, they would be horrified and probably hopefully aren't listening to this. So with all of the characters, I discovered the way for me, at least, to make them really fully human is I almost always start with a real person that strikes me in a big way. And then they evolve and they become their own person. So it's never really based on one single person. But definitely, I mean, when I was in college, my boyfriend was on the basketball team at Berkeley, right? And he had a best friend who actually looked a lot like this Straub character that he had a tremendous bond with. And that made a big impression on me, on these kind of brotherhood bonds. And then the Alex character, I guess a combination of my own goofball status and my best friend is actually from childhood a Cuban refugee. Mm-hmm. And she has a lot of the same characteristics that Alex has, those kind of big jumps between the goofiness you were talking to, but with the intellectual capacity to really wonder about things, a big streak of larceny and toughness, but also, especially because of who her adoptive father was and the way he raised her, a real capacity for kindness and empathy. Mm-hmm. She's only 23 years old, so she hasn't figured all of this out in any way, shape, or form. And of course, she's up against, she didn't know it until she was 16. She thought she was a golden child and everything was perfect. Mm-hmm. She finds out at 16 that, no, her life is screwed and she's going to live basically hiding in the open. I will say that I'm old enough now that I've got three adult children and they, everybody's convinced that somehow they are in these characters, and I just want to assure everybody that no, they're actually not. I have respected their privacy.
Okay. In your About section on your website, you talk about your favorite authors, like Jennifer Egan, Margaret Atwood, Patrick O'Brien. Out of the three of them, which do you think your writing style replicated the most?
I like to read big adventure stories where you really care about the characters, even if there are a lot of unreliable narrators or very complicated characters. Jennifer Egan is the most beautiful writer I know, just the most skilled with prose. She's just a genius with words. So I really admire her for that. Margaret Atwood has, I think, a big capacity to create full worlds that really engage people. And obviously everybody, you know what The Handmaid's Tale is, and think about how long that came out, long ago.
Yeah.
So I really admire that about her. And yet they're grounded. They're speculative fiction in the sense that it's things that could happen, but completely based in a real world. So I love sci-fi too, and I love fantasy, I love horror, I love all of that. But this is a different thing in terms of really identifying with it. But I don't know, if you're not a sailor, you might not know Patrick O'Brien as much. He is a long ago writer who wrote a 18 book series about the Napoleonic Wars, which sounds really funny. But if you start reading him, it's one of these engrossing things that just totally changes your world for about a year because you can't not read about these characters. And also, it was in an era, I think, unlike now, where the publishing industry really would support a writer for a very long period of time. And in a funny way, there weren't as many rules to follow. So it's one of these beautifully written pieces where he could also spend the time to digress on anything that he found interesting, right? Whether it was about bonobos that these characters ended up chasing on, you know, a particular island or a particular kind of storm, or what was happening in society with women in China at the time, even if it didn't exactly advance the story the way every word has to advance a story now, you could kind of trust that if he was interested in it enough to digress and have his characters be passionate and get in trouble over those things, you as a reader were also going to really enjoy it. I think those three especially taught me different things each, and that's why.
Do you think there's a combination of all three of them in your book?
Yeah, sure. The one thing I admire tremendously about all three of them, too, is that they managed to thread a great deal of humor through it. Humor's really hard, mm-hmm. right? You know, you're a horror writer, and you know, I mean, to put some kind of wit, some kind of spark into the writing so that it is multifaceted, so that it's got all the different notes from an orchestra, right, instead of just being kind of monotone, mm-hmm. is a really tricky thing. And that's something I hugely admire about all of those writers, is kind of their wit and humor. And yet they use it to make the characters warmer. It's not just for a comedy itself. It comes out of the characters and the way that they perceive the world.
Yeah, I definitely do agree with that. The humor aspect in writing, that it's extremely important to have a likable, they don't even need to be a likable character, but a likable narrator. I feel like with such a serious topic as a book, your character being a goofball, but having some, you know, like, of course, some serious motives, it's such a light thing to have in your hands. It's like, okay, it's not totally, I am at the edge of my seat, but I'm laughing at the edge of my seat too. Like, it's silly, it's nice, it's soft, and it's easy to get through.
It's a particular worldview that I sure have, for better or worse, and I think most of the people in my family have. It's a little bit of an absurdist view on the world, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, there are times you can either laugh or you can cry. And for a lot of the people in my family, including me, I think the way you would put it is that humor can be wrung from the most dreadful of things. It's one way of approaching life. So it's probably makes sense that my characters have that worldview also.
Yeah, yeah. This book made me cry at the end. I was laying in bed, and when I finished it, I had a tear rolling down my cheek. What did it feel like to write that ending? Did you intend for your readers to cry? Did you feel a certain way? Did you feel kind of like you lost your character?
Oh, you have to understand, when I'm a crazy woman when I'm writing. I'll spend too many years, like I'm doing for this next one, researching, outlining. You know, I'm a lawyer by training, so I outline the H out of everything, right? But when you start actually writing, there's a magic that comes, at least to me, and if anybody had a mic on me in that tiny little kind of back room where I write, you would think I was a crazy person, because I am cracking myself up. I am weeping away, literally walking around with tissues and blowing my nose. I get very, very emotionally caught up and racked up with what's happening in the characters.
Yeah, so you get attached.
I get really, really attached. And yes, I figure if I've really made myself cry, chances are maybe I've made someone else cry too. And if I've made myself laugh, probably there are some like souls out there that will also find it funny. But it is very genuine. On my part, it's very emotional writing. The characters are very, very emotional people.
I remember during certain parts of the book, I was reading some funny bits out to my boyfriend, like, can you believe this? This is so
Well, that gets into, I don't know if I can talk about it, but the sex parts of the book, right? So, you know, it's a book that's primarily about people in their 20s, mm-hmm. which means that that's a, you know, a pretty hot and heavy time of your life where you're looking for partner, you're looking for soulmates, you're looking just for sex, you're looking for all of these things that are such an important part of the human experience and who you are. But there is obviously a lot of sex in the book, right? Though a lot of it is played for humor, but it did traumatize my children. In a big old way, right? So to the point where I think you might have heard this before, but it was completely true. My daughter is a fantastic actress and has got a fantastic voice. And when they were looking for a narrator for the audiobook, I thought, like a special tribute, you know, to her. I called her up and asked her, hey, how would you like it? Maybe I'll, what if I float you as a possible narrator to the publishing company that's doing the audiobook? And there was this dead pause and then this immediate, there is no way in hell I am reading my mother's sex scenes out loud. Boom. That was the end of that. So it was a good wake-up call that, yes, people can have very strong reactions that you don't expect to things.
Yeah. So the ending didn't leave off on much of a cliffhanger. We kind of know what's going on. Would you consider continuing this story?
It's not giving anything away, and I appreciate the point. In my mind, there was always one big overarching story, and what happened was, for all kinds of reasons, it got split in two. So this ending, I felt very, very strongly it was critical that this work is a standalone novel. You know, every novel leaves something open to interpretation and some loose thread so that, you know, you can continue to spill out what you think might happen to these people in the future. But I know what happened to them in the future. And so there is a part two that I'm working on that's actually set for release in the spring of 2027. That is killing me writing right now. It is literally having my teeth knocked out and, you know, having my fingernails pulled out to get this thing done. It's a very tricky thing with a sequel because you also want that to be able to work as a standalone for someone that hadn't read the first one. So there's a lot of sorting out with that. It's been a real learning curve, but that's where it is now.
So I read you studied economics, geography, law, and creative writing. What is something that you want to tell other creative writers?
I think the important thing is to write from your heart. And that is much more important than writing about what you know. Mm-hmm. I think writing about what you know, especially nowadays in your era of AI and everything, the world is just a different place than it was just a blink ago, right? When I started this to do any kind of the research, I would be going to a library and literally I'd have 50 books laid out on a giant library table. I do worry nowadays that it's such a push type of information world. You get your news on Apple News. You only see in narrow silos like so much of our society. So I would definitely urge people to try to look outside of that. Just follow things that are of interest to you. It always shows when you're passionate about something.
I totally agree. I think that's a really good message for early creative writing majors as young as, you know, freshmen here. I've met a couple and I can assume that they're just like me. I don't know what to write. How do I know how to write? Having all these complications, I can only imagine looking back at myself and thinking, oh my gosh, I'm so good.
Well, I have read your stories. You do know how to write. All right.
Thank you.
It is true. You're a fine writer. You're natural. And you've got a great instinct for it.
Thank you.
Your stories are great. They are definitely worth reading and they're going to have an audience. So for any of the young writers out there, you're just going to evolve. That's just the way it is. And somewhere 20 years, 30 years from now, you'll look back and you may not even recognize the stories that you wrote now. It doesn't matter. It all builds. It all informs. Nothing is wasted. And someday you may actually look back and with a kind of yearning for the excitement and the vitality and the pyrotechnics that you brought to your writing when you were 22 years old. What I would really urge for the younger writers to do is really be brave about getting your work out there, because the credibility of having anything published, of having anything in a journal, of getting any award for any short story in a genre really does build up on each other. But I have absolute faith that that you're going to have a huge readership and it's going to keep growing.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. This was Sherry T. Joseph, award-winning author. Do you have anything you want to shout out?
No, I think the podcasts are fantastic. I'm grateful for anybody listening to it. And like I said, read this woman's works. They're huge fun and a big new talent.
Thank you. This was Creasing Corners. I'm DJ Moco, and I'll see you next week with another special episode.